Mr. Acres?
Acres.
Acres, of course. Good morning to you, Mr. Acres.
Good morning, Chief Justice.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Jacob Acres of Smith, Lesky, Porn and Rogers, appearing for Elizabeth Tonegas, formerly known as Gomez. May it please the court.
Counsel.
Today we are asking the court to interpret the decree of dissolution that the parties entered into by their own stipulation. This is a question of law that this court has an obligation to review independent of the trial court's determination. The decree of dissolution discusses that the parties have set parenting time. They have parenting time that they decided on together for regular parenting time, for vacation parenting time, and for holiday parenting time. And then the parties also talked about the religious upbringing of the minor children as well. And in that language, they stated that the children shall be enrolled and be participants in the Catholic religion. And in a parenthetical, including First Communion and confirmation. Further,
does that language exclude participation in other religions?
Not necessarily. The only thing that we interpret this language to say is that it sets out what it means to be participants in the Catholic religion, to be limited to three things: participation in First Communion, in confirmation, and in that Elizabeth has the responsibility to take the children to CCD classes on Wednesday night, or to make them available for Patrick to take them to CCD classes on Wednesday night. That is what the parties put in their agreement, specifying what it means to be participants in the Catholic religion. Now,
are there some things implied in that?
I don't believe so. That would be reading language into it that simply is not there. The parties could have put in a lot of language explaining what it means to be participants in the Catholic language. They could have put in references to external documents to talk about this is what it means to be enrolled and be participants in the Catholic religion. However, they did not see fit to do so. Instead, they set out parenting time for vacations, and they set out parenting time for holidays and regular parenting time as well. And
have the children been raised Catholic up to that point?
It is my understanding, yes.
Is that in our record?
I believe somewhat.
So there's some inherent knowledge of what their past practice had been. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So is it reasonable to base this interpretation on past practice?
The past practice wasn't memorialized in the decree of dissolution, though. And what they did put in there is that holiday time will supersede all other parenting time, except by the express agreement by the parties, that vacation time will supersede regular parenting time, but not supersede holiday parenting time. And nonetheless, notwithstanding all these provisions, the district court read in provisions that are not existing in the decree of dissolution.
What is the significance of the parenting time allocation to the meaning of the religious upbringing?
They are specific provisions. There are specific provisions that deal with how parenting time is allotted versus a general provision in that just says that it's more along the lines of a recital more than anything else, stating that they are going to be enrolled and be participants in the Catholic religion. There's no specific language there that really explains what it is beyond the three that I already listed. Instead, we have specific allocations of parenting time. And what the district court did in its opinion was it said that that the being enrolled and being participants in the Catholic religion overrides everything else and consumes everything else.
Didn't the specific order enforcing the decree that said they either have to go to Mass on the mother's parenting time or she gives up her parenting time and they attend Mass with the father, didn't that come about through an agreement at the hearing? Didn't your client agree to that?
I understand
you disagree with the district court's interpretation of the decree. But wasn't there an agreement by Ms. Gomez's or Ms. Tonegas's counsel that if we had to go to mass, this is the way we wanted it done?
That was only which one they're going to go to if the district court was going to rule as it did. So
which church?
Yes, it was specifically which church they would be going to.
Was it specific as to which mass that was approved by the parents?
I don't believe so.
You're saying church, you're saying Catholic church, Lutheran church?
Catholic church. So with the parenting time that was set out within the decree and the way that the district court interpreted it, he decided that it overrode what language they had already put into the decree themselves. He made it so that attendance at Catholic Mass was required on vacation time, if reasonably feasible, required that it is required every week, and that it is required during holy days of obligation as well, which appears nowhere within the decree of dissolution at all. The party set out 12 specific holidays that they considered to be holidays and specified how parenting time would be taken care of during those holidays. Further, when it comes to the parenting time that was set out on weekends, there is no allowance there in the decree that says on the weekends they have to take them to Catholic Mass.
But she doesn't have to give up her parenting time, does she? All the order enforcing the decree requires is that the children attend Mass. So how does it infringe upon her parenting time?
It infringes upon her parenting time because it's not a restriction that was already placed in the decree of dissolution. The court was trying, didn't interpret the decree. He made a new provision that they had not agreed to themselves. When Gomez filed his motion to enforce, he was seeking for the court to interpret and enforce the provisions that were already there. By adding in these new restrictions that made it so that she had to take the kids to Catholic Mass on weekends, that provision was not existing in the decree of dissolution when it was initially entered into by the parties.
Was the motion to enforce decree the functional equivalent of a request for an order to show cause? Was it designed to be something akin to a contempt proceeding?
In part, possibly.
The motion itself requested contempt relief, didn't it?
Yes.
Was an order to show cause issued, and was this thereafter treated as a contempt proceeding?
I don't believe it was treated as if it were a contempt proceeding.
If it were a contempt proceeding, would the trial court have had authority to modify the terms of the decree to address the dispute?
Only to address the dispute. However, Elizabeth was unaware that it's our position that by interpreting the decree without a request to modify the language of the decree, the trial court was without jurisdiction to do the inherent powers that the trial court would normally otherwise have over a dissolution of a marriage.
Shortly after this motion was filed, your client filed a complaint to modify the decree seeking to obtain sole legal and physical custody, correct? Saying this joint thing isn't working for us anymore. We keep filing contempt motions, we can't make decisions together, there's been a material change in circumstances, please modify custody, correct?
I believe that is correct.
What's the status of that?
I am not certain.
Does it matter to our analysis here whether the decree is still in place as it was at the time the judge made this order?
I don't believe so, because the order that the judge entered is still in place. So the parties are still having to follow what the judge's current order is.
Before you sit down, did the record have any evidence regarding any effect upon the children of the activities of your client?
Not as far as I'm aware. They're still at a decently tender age. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Little, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Adam Richard Little of the law firm Ballou Hazen, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Patrick Gomez. The case that is before this court today is one of the enforcement of an unambiguous contractual agreement to raise these minor children in the Catholic religion.
To the exclusion of all others?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that by the parties contractually agreeing to raise them in the Catholic faith, that inherently excludes other religions. And in fact,
the word raised isn't used. It says enrolled and participants.
That is correct.
And it doesn't say only, right?
That is correct.
So aren't you sort of implying some additional language into that?
We would contend that because this is an unambiguous term, enrolled and participate, those terms are to be used with their plain meaning. To be enrolled and be a participant in the Catholic faith necessarily requires that they must abide by the tenets of that religion.
So is that true, though? I mean, aren't there people that would say that they are participants in the Catholic faith but may not follow all the tenets of the religion?
I'm sure that there are people who may take that position. We believe that particularly in this case, the religious upbringing of the minor children was something that was agreed to, that they are to be raised in this faith specifically. The parties could have...
I beg your pardon, you say this was a negotiated phrase?
Yes, that is correct.
And you believe it to be unambiguous?
That is correct.
And then you go on to say we read it to be only. But
how do we know what the tenets of the Catholic faith are and that limit participation in any other religion? How do we know that from our record?
The record was judicially noticed, the motion to enforce along with the attachments to that, which included an affidavit from Mr. Gomez. Mr. Gomez states some of the specific tenets and some of the reasons that the conduct of the appellant in this case were contrary to those tenets.
Does that appear in the Bill of Exceptions?
It appears in the transcript, Your Honor.
So the short answer to my question
is no.
No.
That is correct.
I want to ask a question I asked opposing counsel. Is there any evidence in this record to suggest that there has been any harm to the children that's resulted from the activities of the opponent?
There's nothing in the record that indicates there were harm to the children. However, we don't believe that harm to the children is necessary at this stage because it is one of contractual interpretation.
Well, it's interpretation of a decree, not a contract.
Right. And I use that terminology here, Your Honor, in that the parties agreed to this specific language as part of that decree. It was an addendum to their parenting plan, which was incorporated into the decree of dissolution. That language being that the children were to be enrolled in participants in the Catholic religion.
Suppose we disagree and think that it is ambiguous. To what do we look to resolve the ambiguity?
If the court believes that terminology is ambiguous, the court does have to be careful with the interplay of the religion and the state here, and we would urge the court to look to the evidence on the record and that what conduct was appropriate between the parties and the fact, for example, that the parties were married Catholic, that they had been raised, the children had been raised Catholic to this point. And through all of this, the court is also governed by what is in the best interests of the children. We would urge that this court should adopt a position where the children are not confused in their religious upbringing. That is why our position with respect to only was in that regard, that by taking them to different churches on different parenting time just serves to confuse the children. And that was the intent of why they agreed to raise them in this specific fashion. So
when you were commenting about if an ambiguity needs to be resolved by the court, that a court would need to be careful with respect to constitutional provisions with respect to religion, too, right? Is that,
yes.
Is that what you were meaning?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and to which constitution were you referring?
The free exercise of religion here. In that the appellant's position in her briefs is one that she has the ability to take the children to her Lutheran services, for example. There's also evidence in the record that she would take them to Lutheran Bible school and things like that, and her belief was that it wasn't a conflict.
Wait, so you're referring to the U.S. Constitution?
Yes. And this court has addressed some of these delicate issues in a couple of cases. One of them, and this is a little bit different, but in Ledoux v. Ledoux, that was a case with a much more significant conflict between the religious positions of the parents. And that was an original divorce decree where one parent was a Jehovah's Witness, the other parent was Catholic, and the decree...
Doesn't your position sort of present these religious problems that you're saying we have to be careful about? I mean, your position is that the parties agreed that they are going to follow all the tenets of the Catholic faith in the raising of these children.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, doesn't that require a court to then decide anytime there's a disagreement about what it means to be a faithful Catholic? And are civil courts authorized or equipped to decide questions of religious doctrine?
It does, but the fact that the parties agreed to that helps alleviate that issue. It is permissible for the court to become involved in the religious upbringing of the children of divorce.
Well, they can decide how it may impact best interests, and that's what the Ledoux case that you're talking about does.
Yeah, that is correct.
But my question is, can they decide? This is just a question of religious doctrine. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to follow the tenets of the Catholic religion? Is that something court can, is equipped, or should decide?
We believe that it is a very narrow one. The court must any action it takes must be very narrowly tailored to avoid any unnecessary infringement upon the substantial rights from that. And I would direct this court to a court of appeals case, Hornung v. Hornung, which dealt with a similar issue of what is that interpretation and how do we apply that.
So in this case, the trial court referenced Holy Day of Obligation, for example. Mm-hmm. Was that listed as one of the obligations, not to confuse the word, one of the holidays or observant days in the decree?
It was not. And the reference
and
to that.
So what would be the authority of a trial court to list or prioritize holidays within a given faith?
I believe that the court is somewhat limited in doing so. We urge this court, though, in this instance, that it was merely enforcing the agreement between the parties to raise them in that. The court couldn't just simply come out and say, this is what we're going to do. But because the parties agreed to do this, the court has the authority to enforce that agreement. And so we believe that the
but
court...
But the court here is really drilling down on specifics.
The court is here.
Not, mm-hmm. not written in the words of the document.
That is correct.
And so where does that come from?
We believe that the court was referencing Mr. Gomez's affidavit and the information that he'd stated as to his position as being raised Catholic, being a member of that faith, and what actions were contrary to that. In his motion and his affidavit, as well as the supplementary materials, he stated repeatedly that attendance at regular Mass, as well as those holy days of obligation, were a critical component to it. Now, one of the important aspects of their agreement is that the children would participate in First Communion and Confirmation.
That was identified.
That's correct.
Okay.
And in order to participate in those, Mr. Gomez identified that the children do have to regularly attend these services, from regular Mass, holy days of obligation, etc. So the court, in entering its order, was enforcing the agreement between the parties, of which Ms. Tanagis was attempting to undermine after the fact. She's entered into this agreement, agreed to do so, and then decided, you know what, I want to teach them something else, or I want to do something that's inconsistent with that agreement.
So it was the husband's explanation of what is required by the religion that informed the court's decision to say so. Is that a fair reading of the record?
That is. And the court took judicial notice of that, which is has the effect of making it a fact in the case. Ms. Tana just never took an objection to that, nor did she raise that issue on appeal. And so we believe that that information is a part of the record and is one that helps to guide this court in reaching its decision.
But it's not in the Bill of Exceptions.
It is not in the Bill of Exceptions, no.
Haven't we said 50, if not 100 times, that the only way to present evidence is by the Bill of Exceptions?
That is correct.
Aren't you asking us to do otherwise?
That is I see that my time has expired. May I briefly respond to your question and conclude? Yes, I think I am asking the court to do so in this case. I would ask the court to review the record de novo as it is a matter of law, and in doing so, it asks the court to affirm the decree in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 20 seconds, Mr. Akers.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. points my opposing counsel brought up was that he referenced to Gomez's affidavit. And while that may give us a little bit of a background as to what the party's relationship was, that wasn't part of the decree of dissolution. It was never referenced in the decree of dissolution either. It's not part of it, so it should not matter in determining what the plain language of the decree of dissolution means.
What affidavit is he referring to?
As part of the motion to enforce, there were several attachments to it. One of them was an affidavit by Patrick Gomez, essentially explaining all the matters in the motion to enforce. As another part is whether she can take the children to Lutheran services or not. And there's no provision in the decree of dissolution which prohibits her from doing so. It only says that the children will be enrolled and be participants in the Catholic religion. There's not a restriction on her taking the children somewhere else. It would be...
Are you challenging that portion of the order in force? I thought I recall in your brief said that you were not challenging the restriction on attending other.
In full, we believe that the district court exceeded its jurisdiction by interpreting the decree of dissolution without having a request to do so. And for that matter, we believe that that portion of it is also invalid as well.
Does your brief not say that you're not challenging?
I don't believe so. I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the second case of the day, which is State versus Nelms.